Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India.
When you were young, if you were getting angry a lot and using very, very harsh words against people, I'd say you weren't in peace, but that you weren't conscious enough of what's going on. When we're young, we're very reactive. We're very reactive to the world around us. But living in impulse, living in instinct, living in reaction is not our highest goal. But it is what happens a lot when we're young as we grow, especially if there are things going on that are making life difficult for us. And if you had a tendency toward anger as a young girl, I would say that something was going on in your life, in your family, not that necessarily was bad or wrong. You know, we see it a lot with kids who suddenly have a new sibling, a younger sibling, right? You've got a 5-year-old child, let's say, who spent his or her whole life being the only one. Now suddenly there's a new baby. Now suddenly that child gets angry, develops anger problems, or is acting out. It's not that the parents have done something wrong, but in the child's mind, their love has been withdrawn. Because now everyone's paying a lot more attention to the brand new baby, and the 5-year-old is sort of expected to suck it up and be the big boy now or the big girl now. And little things like that, I say little not in terms of the impact, but in terms of how common they are. Nonetheless, in many, many cases, have impacts on us like that if we don't examine them. So when I say something was going on, I'm not saying that somebody was necessarily doing something wrong. We see it with children when parents get divorced. We see it with children whose parents work so much that they never see them. Again, the parents are doing the best they can, trying to give their children the best opportunities, trying to provide for them. But in the child's mind, who wants mom or dad there, why are you not reading me a goodnight story? Why do you not get home to say goodnight? It creates, not always, but it can create anger. So I would say that there was anger in your youth, but that you weren't clear enough to be aware of it. Children are not growing with the awareness that the reason I'm now a bully on the playground is because I've got this little sibling. And I've really been angry since the day she was born. They're not that introspective, right? So you could say, oh, that kid's in peace. But schoolyard bullies are never in peace. Rule of thumb, there's always something going on. Otherwise, you don't take out anger on other people. We only share that which we have. If what we're sharing is anger, it means that's what's inside. It's why being around people who are happy is so much more fun than being around people who are not happy. Right? We've all seen it. You have a friend or friends who you know are going through a hard time. You want to be there to support them. And yet, after a while, you find yourself getting kind of drained. Like, it's just, it's no longer enjoyable to be around this person because they are always negative, always complaining, always cranky, always upset. And people a lot of times find themselves caught in that wanting to be compassionate, wanting to be caring, but inside we're no longer enjoying actually being with that person. Whereas when somebody's happy, genuinely happy, those are the types of people we actively like to be around because they're sharing happiness. So I would look back at your childhood, not in a woe is me, you know, get stuck in your childhood way, but just with a little bit of introspection that's aware that maybe the anger you're feeling now started many, many decades ago. And now, as you say, as you're growing, that anger makes you miserable. So the question then becomes, when it's something that makes us miserable, and it's something that makes other people not want to be around us, why do we hold on to it? You know, there's that beautiful saying that getting angry is like drinking poison and expecting the other guy to die. You know, you're angry at someone or something, but ultimately you're the one suffering. They may know it, they may not know it. They may care, they may not care. But they're certainly not losing sleep over it. You're losing sleep over it. And in a way, that's good. Because it makes you know, I need to be free of this. And so I would look back at when was the first time you remember really having a temper tantrum, really losing yourself, really in your childhood. See if you can, just for the sake of insight, get a little bit of clarity into when this might have started. And if you can't remember, don't worry. But I'm always fond of insight. I think it's something very beautiful to help us understand this karmic package we have, this particular journey that we are on in this body, this story, this particular karmic journey. So try to go back and see if you can remember the first time that you got really angry. What triggered it? It'll give you probably some insight into what's going on. And then look at yourself now. What is it that triggers you? Chances are a lot more triggers you than when you were young. Because as we speak about a lot here, getting angry actually makes me more likely to get angry in the future. You can't get it out. It's not food poisoning. It's not a tumor that you can just get out and be done. Every time you lose yourself in anger, you create that sanskara even deeper, that impression even deeper. You're more likely to get angry in the future. So you need to now just decide, enough. Enough. Start building a toolbox of when you start to feel anger bubbling. What are your tools? So we've got tools of a walk around the block, right? A nice walk in the fresh air. Tools of a glass of water being drank very slowly. Tools of counting to 100. Those are sort of the easy ones. Simple ones, I should say. Then you start to develop tools like meditation. Pranayama. Pranayama is a very interesting thing to do when you're angry because anger changes our breath. It makes it very shallow. It makes it very short. It brings it all the way up here. Right? We're really angry. We really get angry. Okay? If you can start to do pranayama and actually grab control of your breath, it'll change the emotional experience. And then from pranayama, you can go into meditation. So those are in the moment what to do when you notice it arising. And slowly, slowly, it'll have less of a hold on you. But along with that, you also want to shift the personality from the one who gets angry to the one who's infinitely patient and giving. So start bringing some new things into your life. Bring in a new seva project. Bring in some new ways of really being beautiful to other people. Right? If you find yourself in line at the coffee shop, buy the cup of coffee for the person in front of you or the person behind you for no reason whatsoever. Just because as you do it, it's going to change how you think about yourself. Just go out of your way to do as many things as you can. You're in line? Let someone cut in front of you. Why don't you go ahead? Again, no reason. Just to retrain how you think of yourself. And slowly, slowly, that whole personality will change. If you've been trying them and they're not working, what it means is that there's something deep inside of you that needs to be worked through. And I would go back again to those early days when you got angry and see what triggered it. What is the root of your anger? If you're not going to get rid of it, fine. Go into it. You know, when I first moved to Parmarth Niketan, we have these prayers at 5 o'clock in the morning, and they used to be compulsory. So I was there every morning, and I never had been used to sitting cross-legged. In America, we tend not to spend very much time sitting cross-legged on the floor. And although I was a yoga student, nonetheless, I was not advanced enough as a yoga student that my hips and my knees were really flexible and I could just keep sitting. So the prayers usually go an hour. It's half an hour of prayers and then half an hour of a talk in Hindi. And what I would find is that after about 30, 35 minutes or so, my hip would just start burning like it was on fire. And some days, winter time when there were a lot fewer people in the satsang room, I could very easily kind of stretch my legs out and, you know, change the cross of my legs and no issue. But in summertime, when it was really crowded, there wasn't any space. There was another woman basically like right here, essentially in my lap. There was no way to change the cross of anything. And I developed, in the beginning, it would really bother me. It's hurting. And I first tried to just meditate it away. Like I just wasn't going to pay attention to it. Just wasn't going to pay attention. But it hurt too much. And my hip was on fire. And I then discovered, that since I couldn't pretend it wasn't there, I couldn't ignore it, I couldn't meditate it away, I was just going to turn all my attention to it and literally dive into that fire. And I started actually making kind of a joke out of it. I don't recommend this for your anger, but I started making kind of a joke out of it. And I would say to my hip, come on, is this the best you can do? Can't you get a little hotter? Come on, keep burning, I'm still here. And what I discovered was that the more I taunted it, the less it hurt. And the more I really dove into it, the less it troubled me. Now, in your case, I wouldn't begin by taunting it, because there's clearly something serious that is going on. But if you can't outrun it, and you can't meditate it away, dive into it. The anger is coming. You know a glass of water is not going to work. You know a walk around the block isn't going to work. Fine. Sit down and get angry. But not with your mouth. Not with your fists. Sit down, close your eyes, and just allow the anger. Just feel yourself burning in anger. And as you do that, try to bring some awareness to it. What is that anger saying? Don't allow yourself to get stuck in whatever story it's telling you this time. This person said this. Don't allow yourself to get sold off so cheaply. Go into the depth. What are you really angry about? Where in your body does it feel angry? What color is the anger? Really look at it. What is it trying to tell you? See what it says.
You're listening to OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me.
The pull, the distractions. Chahe hamaya kehte hain. Chahe apna man ka waves kehte hain. There's always something that's pulling us off our grounding, off our anchoring. Aur ye aaj ka nahi hai. Ye shuru se. Today we have our smartphones and they beep and they ring and they vibrate and they do all sorts of things that distract us. We get an email every 2 seconds, some notification for it every 2 seconds. But that's not actually the core problem. Because for thousands and thousands of years, since the time our scriptures were written down, we've been being taught about taking care of the monkey mind. Monkey mind, aaj kahani hai. This is the nature of the mind. Maya. This is not aaj ka concept. This is not, oh, you have a smartphone, so let's think of a word to describe the smartphone grabbing you. Or, oh, the makers of YouTube and Facebook are, you know, sending you things to just waste your time. Let's think of a word, chalo isko maya bolte. To maya to shastra mein baat kar rahe. The nature of the mind to be distracted, the nature of the mind to be attracted by Maya, is something that existed long before not only smartphones, long before any phone, long before any television set, long before any shopping center. It's the nature of the mind. And so it's a practice of the mind. They go, you can't make the world stop grabbing you. You have to work with yourself. It's like that beautiful story of the king everybody used to walk barefoot. The kingdom, of course, in those days, thousands of years ago, was covered with rocks and rough ground and bushes and things. And the bottoms of everyone's feet always used to get, you know, kind of scratched up. But this king was very sensitive. And so he calls one day a meeting of all of his officers. And he says, I'm tired of my feet getting cut up on the rocks, on the branches. I want you to take some good material and cover the floor of the entire kingdom. Wherever there's rocks, wherever there's bushes, I want you to cover it with some nice fabric so that wherever I walk, it will feel nice on my feet. Naturally, most of the officers are just like, yes, sir, yes, sir. But one of them says very, very humbly, Your Majesty, if I may, just a humble idea, to cover the entire kingdom, every square inch of the kingdom, with some nice fabric, sounds like kind of an impossible feat. Then a kapre kahan se milega? Fir ek bar laga diya, then it gets torn, you have to keep fixing it. He says, may I humbly suggest, Your Majesty, that we prepare something that you can wear on your feet, that are covered with something soft, so that wherever you walk, your feet will feel soft and nice. And that this was the beginning of what we call shoes. Right? And I love that story because most of us think that the answer to things is to fix everything in the world. The world is pulling me. The world is attracting me. The world is distracting me. I have to somehow make it stop. Nobody should talk to me. Nobody should call me. Nobody should email me. Nobody should honk their horn when I drive by. Nobody should ring my doorbell. Right? Nobody should disturb me. Well, that's kind of a tall order. Instead, rather than trying to make everything something that suits you, we work instead on our own mind that's getting distracted, that's getting pulled, that's getting attracted. And that's what all of our spiritual work is about. It's what our meditation is for. It's what our mantra jap is for. It's what our seva is for. It's what our introspection is for. Some of those things help the mind slow down. Some of them purify the mind. Some of them help us understand why we're getting attracted, where we're getting attracted. But all of them together give you a mind that doesn't jump around, that you're able to, I don't like to use words like control because it implies that there's kind of a master-slave relationship going on, but a mind that is your friend, a mind that is your tool, a mind that you can use rather than that uses you. And so that's what all of our spiritual practice is for, and this is not news flash of today. This is what our scriptures tell us. This is what all the commentaries tell us. This is what the sages and the saints and the rishis have been telling us. Hazaron salon se. Dhyan karo, jap karo, yog karo, seva karo. Swayam ko dekho, apne vichar ko dekho. Upvas karo. Why? Because it enables us to actually get free from the bondage of the mind. The world is not going to stop. It's just going to get more. I don't see a situation where we have fewer things beeping and buzzing and blinking and vibrating every year. I think we're going to have more of them. It's what happens with technology. We can't rewind life and say, I'd like to go back to the, you know, pre-telephone, pre-TV era. Life moves forward. And so we move forward with it and we figure out, okay, how do I not get distracted? How do I not find myself pulled around? And the key answer is just staying conscious. Just staying conscious. We're on our computers. We've gone to send an email. Suddenly some advertisement pops up. We click on it. Before we even realize it, suddenly we're 25 clicks into something and we're typing in our credit card number for something that we never wanted, we'll never use. Like we've been hypnotized. Or we go online to watch something short. Somebody has suggested, oh, you should listen to this song. Or watch this lecture. We go on for a specific purpose. One thing we're supposed to watch or listen to. 3 hours later, 30 clicks later, you don't even have to click these days. YouTube just does it for you. You just keep sitting, and it'll just keep. Until you hit stop, it's going to keep playing things. But we have a choice. We have the choice and we need to use it. But we have to stay conscious to use it. If we allow our consciousness to be hijacked by somebody's algorithm that says, ah, after this video, they're going to want to see this one. After this, they'll want to see that. then we really become slaves. Then we're slaves literally to an algorithm. Somebody somewhere is sitting programming what someone like us is likely to keep watching. We've given up all of our freedom then. So we stay conscious about how we're spending our time, what we're clicking on, who we're spending time with. Just because you're invited somewhere doesn't mean you have to say yes. This is all part of our spiritual practice. Otherwise, yeah, you get very distracted, very pulled off track very quickly. तो जाना पड़ा उन्होंने हाथ जोड़ के मेरे को इनवाइट किया था तीन बार मुझको फोन किया था इसका मतलब नहीं है कि जाना पड़ेगा इट जस्ट मीन्स यू हैव टू बी लविंग एंड पोलाइट बट इफ वी गिव अप आवर ओन फ्रीडम And our own grounding and our own anchoring, just because someone's invited us someplace, or YouTube wants to show us something, or we've seen some advertisement, then we're not walking closer and closer to moksha. We're actually binding our own hands and our own lives every moment. And this is where consciousness is freedom. I am aware, do I want to watch this or no? Want to watch it? No problem. Enjoy. Want to go have coffee with that person? Wonderful. Go, enjoy. But you don't want to? Learn how to say no. With love, politely. But grab that free will. Otherwise, everyone and anyone in person, online, through an algorithm, is just looking to steal your time and attention. Because in many cases, it's rupees, it's dollars, right? The longer they can get you staring at the screen, the more likely you are to click buy now on whatever they're showing you. But even if somebody's not looking for our money, and they're just looking to steal our time and waste our time. We have to be conscious. Just like we lock our homes before we go out, lock your car when you park. In the same way, maintain a sense of real clarity over your sense of time and energy, attention. It's very precious.
This is OTRFM, part of the iOM Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times. Co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth Radio is conscious living for your soul. Every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with inspiration and transformation.
The core ailments, causes of suffering. And it's a cause of suffering because we then identify only as the body. And we become singularly focused only on the physical body, getting as much as we can. It's a very interesting psychological ignorance, myth, game that our minds play. Somehow, if I have more things, think about it. Imagine that you are in the forest or you're in the jungle and there's a wild animal coming towards you, right? So instinctively, the goal is going to be, and this is actually what you get told when you go hiking in bear country or mountain lion country in California, is if you encounter a bear or you in those areas, or you encounter a mountain lion, make yourself look as big as possible. Raise your hands. Don't threaten the animal. Don't threaten it, but just make it think that you are bigger than you are. Now that is a survival instinct to try to hopefully keep this thing from taking my life. But what happens very interestingly is in this idea of being bigger, being more, throughout our lives, it's not so much about raise your arms and, you know, use your shawl, but it actually becomes this myth of if I can accumulate more, acquire more, more wealth, more power, more material items, I somehow am bigger. I am therefore less susceptible to things that afflict smaller people. So this fear of death that we have, A, leads us into these very off-the-track paths of unnecessarily accumulating, acquiring, as though somehow my six houses are going to do me any good if I get a terminal illness, or even if I simply have that terminal illness called life. And it's a very interesting situation, because the thing we fear most is the one non-negotiable of our lives. We are all going to die. Guaranteed. We are walking closer to that every day. We are one day closer to death today than we were yesterday. Non-negotiable. So this fear of death, while it's very good to keep our physical body alive, we stay back from heights, it's smart. Fear of, you know, claustrophobia, again, smart. You don't want to fall, you don't want to suffocate. But if I'm living my life in fear of the one non-negotiable, then I'm living in illusion. I'm living somehow in this ignorant illusion that I can stave off that which is inevitable. Which, of course, isn't true. It brings us back then to avidya, ignorance. And so the very first step in freeing ourselves is the real deep awareness. We're all going to die. You know, where we do the Ganga Aarti, across the river and downriver somewhat, is the cremation ground for Rishikesh. It's just down past the new bridge, past Janki Bridge. And sometimes in Arati, you can see that there's a cremation going on. And I always, whenever it's happening, usually I keep my eyes closed, just allow myself to lose myself in the Arati. But if I notice a cremation going on, I always try to keep my eyes open. Because it's a very powerful meditation to know that here I am, celebrating, singing, dancing. And yet, tomorrow, the day after, next week, I'm going to be standing there over the burning bodies of my loved ones. Tomorrow, day after, next week, it's going to be me burning in that funeral pyre. And the power of the meditation is not either or. So it's not that I've left mentally being here in Arati and now I'm the one mourning or the one burning. But it's actually the meditation of, can you hold all three realities simultaneously? I am the one celebrating. I am the one dancing. I am the one mourning. And I am the one burning. And it's not easy at all, but just even aiming to do that is a very powerful practice because we feel very safe. We've got this big, wide Ganga between us and cremation. Like, this is the celebration side. We're far away. But when you go up from the waters, just a couple feet, the flames from our Arati and the flames from their cremation intermingle. You no longer can tease apart what's a flame of celebration and a flame of death. And so the core piece is to recognize we're all dying, which then brings us to what we are here on earth for, which is, okay, so what is it that doesn't die? And how can I connect with that before the body does die? Because that's when the actual, not only awakening, enlightenment, moksha, but along with that is when my fear of death dissipates. Because if I know it isn't me dying, it's just the body, then that fear dissipates. It's not that we want to die. We love this life. This body is a beautiful gift. Life is an extraordinary gift. We should love it, savor it, protect it. But we also are aware that isn't who I am. So that's the solution.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin, with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation.
Until and unless we are fully enlightened, okay, we are going to find some situations more easy to love. We're going to find some situations more easy to experience God. There's a reason that people feel inspired and uplifted and connected to the divine much more sitting on the banks of Ganga than sitting on a subway in New York City. God is everywhere. And for enlightened beings, you take, you know, Paramhansa Ramakrishna, stick him on a subway in New York, and I have no doubt that he would cry in love for God as he saw the divine and everybody walking on and off the subway, bowing at everybody's feet. But for the rest of us, there will be certain situations that feel more conducive to our spiritual growth, certain situations where we feel closer to the divine. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's what we have temples for. It's what we do puja for. It's what we come to ashrams for. Nothing wrong with that. It just means you're still human. In the same way, if we are fully and completely awake, enlightened beings, we're going to love all exactly the same. Because we see the same divine in all exactly the same. But as long as there's still a bit of humanness in us, we're going to have a much easier time loving those who we feel close to. Loving strangers is very difficult. The only way I know to love strangers is only because you love God and you realize that God exists in all. And so in that way, you would love everyone because you love God and realize God is in everyone. But to love someone who we are close to, that's very easy. Our hearts are open to them. We are connected to them already. And remember, we're connected also to their soul, their spirit, their essence. So we are connecting to the divine. But we're connecting through a being who feels very close to us. So I think it is thoroughly impractical. I'm not even sure that it would be ideal, but even if it were, thoroughly impractical to expect any mother ever to love every single child on earth exactly as much and in exactly the same way as she loves her own child. But I don't think that that has to be the goal. And the fact that she doesn't necessarily mean it's only attachment. We love where we are able to open ourselves to. Now we are open to those who we feel close to. We can open our hearts to those we feel close to. We become vulnerable. We trust. We let down our guard. We let them really see us. And so then we can love. If I've got my guard up, if I'm protecting myself, if I'm hiding myself from you, then I'm not going to be able to love you so much because there's this big wall between us. And so, on the highest spiritual level, yeah, we see the divine in all, we are open-hearted to all. That's the goal, it's where we're all walking to. But along the way, it's gonna be a lot easier to feel love of God in your mom or your dad or your grandma or your grandpa than in some random woman walking down the street or some random man walking down the street. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. As long as we respect all, care for all, there's no rule that says I must love everyone exactly like I love my mother or my baby. Attachment tends to be around how that other being acts, lives, chooses. So if it's just love, then regardless of what they wear, regardless of their grades in school, regardless of what career path they choose, regardless of anything, I still love them. The attachment is in, I need them too. They better dress like this or I'm going to be really angry. They better act like this or I'm going to be really angry. They must follow this profession, get this career, study this in school, or I'm going to be really angry. That's attachment. Attachment suffocates. Attachment doesn't let the other being blossom. Think about like a beautiful flower, but I squeeze it so hard I actually kill it. I'm just trying to hold on to it. I really love it. But in my loving of it, I've tried to own it. And so I've squished it in my hand. That's what attachment does. Love, we're able to just love it as it blossoms. We don't need to own it or control it. We can just love.
This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week. And I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on Om Times Radio.